Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by Braintree. Looking to set up payments for your business? Braintree gives your app or website a payment solution that accepts just about every payment method with one easy integration. Plus, Braintree will give you the first $50,000 in transactions fee-free. To learn more, visit BraintreePayments.com/NSS. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/NSS to apply for a loan now.
Machine beats man again. Obama talks encryption. And inside the mind of a blindfold chess master. Live from the Twit Brick House in beautiful downtown Petaluma, it's the new Screensavers.
Screensavers, welcome back. Episode 44 for Saturday, March 12th, 2016. Ladies and gentlemen, Liberty Madison.
Liberty Madison.
I'm so pleased that you could be here today.
Thank you so much.
I'm so sorry that I shaded you last week. What did I say?
You threw me like major shade. I was thinking, why is Leo Laporte throwing me major shade on last week's episode of the new Screensavers?
I said you were good at self-promotion.
And you know what I had to do to respond to that?
You made that T-shirt.
I made my own T-shirt.
You're the only person I know with your own hashtag, That Tech Girl.
We'll get into that because more people should have that. But
you're good at social media.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I'll take that. Yeah. It wasn't shade. I'll take that.
It looks like a little self-promotion going on there. But after all, isn't that really what Twitter's all about? Twitter is.
I think that's what life is all about.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I hope you didn't think that I was saying anything wrong with it.
Oh, no. But you did encourage the shirt, so thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
I didn't have my shirt until last night, 9 o'clock.
That's awesome.
Delivered. Thanks.
So glad it came in time.
Thank you.
And then thanks to Evan Harris from Phoenix, Arizona, good friend. Been how many times have you been to the studio? 3 or 4 times, right?
This is the third.
Third time. And you're going to come to the new studio when we open in the fall, right?
You'll have me, yes.
I will have you, absolutely. Thank you, Evan. Nice job doing the show open. We're going to have a great show for you. Shocking result in South Korea. Google's Go playing machine, AlphaGo, beat Lee Sedol, 18-time Go world champion, mm-hmm. for the third time winning the match. We're going to talk about that in just a bit. We're also going to add another piece to the ultimate virtual reality gaming machine. This time it's the RAM. We're going to talk about Call for Help. Liberty is going to help somebody promote with social media. And I'm really excited. I talked to the Blindfold Chess King.
Wow.
BlindfoldKing.com about his match. It's going on, I think, right now. He's playing 35 games of chess without looking at the board.
Without looking at the board.
His goal is to go to 50. We'll ask him how he does it. We'll even talk with a neuroscientist who's been testing him to find out what his special abilities are. He's like a mutant. He's like an X-Man. But first, South By. Why aren't you at South By?
You know what? I'm starring in my own film. It's called Liberty Madison. Stars in The Last Person Left in Silicon Valley. Brought to you by South by Southwest.
But she's not any good. She's not any good at self-promotion, folks.
So I am.
Really?
I
it's
like
called?
The Last Person.
The Last
I am
Person?
Yeah, I am starring in that
Silicon
film.
Silicon Valley. Yeah.
So I stayed behind because, of course, I wanted to be here with you,
Leah. Well, thank you. Is it really my fault? You know, I stopped going because it's a wonderful party. It's a great time. And probably you'd meet so many people. It'd be a great place to make connections. But we never got any big tech news there. Maybe I'm wrong, though. In fact, we've got Brian Reich with us right now. He's managing director of Little M media, an expert in social media, and you are in Austin, I think.
Yes, I am.
Is it amazing? Am I missing out on the best ever?
I mean, the weather's really nice.
And the president was there.
The president was here. And, you know, as always, there's a lot going on. But, no, I think actually your assessment that no big tech news comes out of it is probably accurate. I spend a lot of my time working on serious issues and trying to apply tech to solve other problems. So there's a lot more of that, I think, going on than maybe big, you know, startups breaking out and, you know, transforming the way we, you know, get food delivered or whatever the big challenge is facing the world today.
That's where South By got its reputation, because Twitter broke out there in 2007, mm-hmm. I think.
Yep.
Foursquare broke out there.
We can't
last
forget
year,
Meerkat.
It was the Meerkat show. Whatever happened to Meerkat?
We all know the big P word that happened.
Periscope happened.
I was going to go with Pivot. But Periscope was perfect.
Yeah, that's the big P word. And when Twitter does its own thing, it's kind of hard to compete. So you're saying, Brian, that you don't expect any breakout apps there this year?
No. On the live streaming stuff, everyone's talking about Facebook Live. Virtual reality is all over the place, but I think it's more show and tell than really you know, anything groundbreaking. But, you know, the president being here is...
That's huge.
That was huge. And you know, it was the first day. So I don't know that you're going to top the president of the United States coming. So
it's interesting because President Obama took this opportunity to say to Silicon Valley, do not be such purists. You need to compromise on encryption. He said smartphones shouldn't be treated as some special little snowflake here. We're going to have to work. Apple's going to have to work with the government and break encryption. And I couldn't disagree with him more. What was the reaction of that audience at South By?
So I think it's important to remember that the first thing the president came and talked about was the challenge that he wanted to put to Silicon Valley and to entrepreneurs and innovators to help improve the functioning of government
and put in place systems
for efficiency. And so when he was asked the question at the end about privacy versus encryption, I think the spirit of his answer was help us figure this out, right? Clearly right now the government has a position. Silicon Valley has a position. Those positions are pretty far apart, but it doesn't have to be that way. And so I think by the time the question was answered, most people in the audience were
on his side.
You know, not on his side, but they were willing to take on the challenge to sit across the table and negotiate some sort of better outcome. I think the coverage afterwards and you know, your response, you know, is in that vein to some extent is, you know, let's remember the beginning of the conversation as well, which is there are still very, very different and strong opinions as to how this stuff should unfold. So the question is whether or not the president was able to melt the divide and that more people will start to sit around the table and try to figure out whatever the way it should be. Because obviously we can't continue with both sides just playing in their own sandbox.
Yeah.
Not going to get anywhere.
So I'm really glad. And of course, President Obama, very instrumental in Code for America, did a lot to create a kind of a tech elite, or maybe not, at least not the right word, a tech core, more like the Peace Corps, of people who are really doing a lot to make government more responsive, more transparent. And
yeah, he has. He's
100% for that. 100% for that. But I got to tell you, he's misguided on the encryption thing. It's not that we're fetishizing the phones. It's that the math doesn't bend to politics. It's just math. And it would be like going to, and encryption is math, it'd be like going to a mathematics conference and said, guys, you've got to be flexible in this 2+2=4 thing. There are other points of view. We have to compromise. It's not a question of that. Encryption exists. Too late. He says, don't fetishize your phone. That's not the issue. It's not about phones. It's about the government saying encryption is bad for law enforcement. Well, they may say that. That may even be true. Nobody's denying that. It's too late. Encryption exists. And if you take it, we have history of the government saying, oh, we can't let encryption get into the hands of the bad guys. Back in 1996, they said, oh, you can't export strong encryption. We're going to treat it like munitions, blocking the export of strong encryption. How did that work out for us? Well, I can tell you Netscape, as a result, made a version of Netscape. They're not going to make one for the U.S. and one for the rest of the world with 40-bit encryption, crap encryption that's easily broken. And here we are 20 years later suffering the security consequences of crap encryption. Many websites still support 40-bit encryption, and hackers are able to use that to attack you. And it's history. It's a fact. So I think he's absolutely right to enlist the support of coders, but it is a complete misunderstanding of what encryption is for him to say, oh, let's not fetishize encryption. Let's talk. Let's sit down at the table. It's 2 + 2 = 4. It's done.
Well, I think he's going with a 2.5
model. Well, but I would
pi is not 3. I'm sorry.
But I would also say that.
Go ahead, Brian.
I think I'm not picking sides. I actually I sit literally in the middle of this type of conversation. I think what he's actually saying, though, is it's not just a conversation about encryption, right? So there are clearly a whole range of aspects here. Part of it is the actual code and security. Part of it is the evolution of the laws. Part of it is the shifts in the behavior.
I understand
and,
that. And you can
and
make
we're
Congress
not having
can
any
and...
of those other conversations.
No,
though, right?
No,
we're not going to
because there's no
Congress.
Conversation. Congress can make a law making these open to law enforcement, and they probably will, and
right,
it will have the
wants
same
that.
Effect as making the law saying that strong encryption was munitions and should not be exported. The effect will be, and we know because we have history, negative.
What I'm saying is I think one of the things he acknowledged in the conversation yesterday is that making of bad laws, if Congress will even pass any laws at the moment, isn't the entirety of the solution, nor is it the methodology that the government would like to take. The question is, are there other aspects of things having to do with the balance between security and privacy and the best interests of fighting, violent extremism or online harassment and all that, that nobody in the government is, sufficiently qualified to be thinking about on their own. And largely, very few people from Silicon Valley, from the marketing community, from all the different, families represented at South by, they're not in the conversation at all. And so we're not solving it, we're not getting any closer. This is the first time anyone from this president has reached out here.
Yes, thanks for reaching
that's
out.
Exactly.
I agree. But he's going to get – I think what he's going to hear is there's a mismatch between politics, which is the art of compromise, and as it should be, the art of negotiation. That's what it is. And math. And encryption, unfortunately or fortunately, exists. And it's too late to outlaw it. And any attempt to outlaw it is misguided. And I think that he'll hear that from these technologists.
What else would Silicon Valley offer? I mean, I don't even know the answer to that, right? So let's say that the math is the math, and I'm not disagreeing. I agree with you. The math is the math. There are other things that the people who, build the Facebooks and the Googles and the, Airbnbs and whatnots of the world know about how to nudge human behavior, know how to, maybe take someone who's headed down the wrong path towards a dangerous set of actions and move them back in the right direction.
Absolutely. Facebook's doing some really interesting things along that line.
Exactly. But they're not, everything is going into that same bucket. No one is sharing that or helping the government figure that out. And so the government, who's there trying, to protect our safety and our values and our rights, is ill-equipped to do it. Wouldn't it be great if, those who actually have figured out how to manipulate human behavior to, take less meaningful actions also applied it to some of these things that we know have more significant consequences?
No, well, I think that's great that the government has actually done that. And that's one of the things that President Obama has done and reached out with 18F to create the organization and community where they did come. I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
No, what is that?
They came out and they invited thought leaders from all over Silicon Valley to come into what they would call a closed think tank. So they wanted to enlist thought leaders from Airbnb, Facebook, every top tech company to lend top tech resources to help them streamline all of their websites and really upgrade their technology. So I think that he did reach out to the tech community, but, you know, if they didn't call you, they didn't call you. But if they, they reached out to you with 18F,
right,
which is great. Yeah, which is
right
great.
On, because I think geeks tend to be...
I was part of that, and it was a group.
Were you?
I was.
No, I think geeks tend to be dismissive of government and say, I'm not going to play at all. And they tend to be libertarian,
but they're open.
And so we're all part of society. We have to participate in society.
Exactly.
That is absolutely a good movement. How fun was that for you?
It was amazing. Salesforce had the opportunity to host it, so it was fantastic. They brought everyone from different sectors to show exactly how technology in Silicon Valley is changing the face of tech, of the websites that you can go to across the board. Let's just say you're applying for immigration or your green card or Social Security
and student loan.
Student loans.
Good
All
example.
These websites were built 20 years ago, costing hundreds and, you know, $1,000, millions of dollars, and Silicon Valley pretty much solved it in a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So that was exciting. So yeah, definitely.
So South by starts with the music. What is it? What is it? Used to be interactive, then music, then film.
No,
is it all mushed
together
now?
Interactive and film essentially start at the same time, and then music comes once all the nerds
leave. Did I tell you why I didn't attend, Leo? I'm protesting South by Southwest.
Why?
Because I'm a Texan, and I know what it truly is. It is for the
Austin.
Music.
Oh, okay.
No, it's true.
Tech people came over and said, we're going to make this Burning Man. We're going to make it everything tech, and they took it over.
They did. They changed it.
I stayed
it.
For
yeah.
music a couple years ago.
There you go.
It's a totally different...
Totally different?
And extraordinary... I mean... Interactive and film are fun, and I mean, a lot of parties. Music is something on a completely other level. And if you've never had a chance to come to South by for music, come for music, because
that's
all
how it started.
Day and mm-hmm. all night, and it's just the authenticity of the whole experience is just on another level with music.
So anything else to look forward to? I know really Monday and Tuesday are big days for South by. The weekend is just kind of the kickoff.
Yeah, you know, one of the interesting things as it has expanded, right, and the criticism is that it's too big, is there are more and more topics that are really being taken on in a thoughtful way. So there's a lot of really good stuff around sports and the data and the media implications of the sports world embracing tech, the social good stuff. I wrote about it today in VentureBeat that, you know, I'm a little underwhelmed at, you know, how Silicon Valley and the tech community have applied their intelligence and creativity to solving some of the most complex problems in the world. But, you know, there's a lot of people talking about it and trying to figure out ways to use design thinking and, you know, really incredible stuff to solve that. So that's flourishing. What I think, you know, has almost been lost to some extent as, as all these other topics have been brought in is, you know, there's less of a almost hacker culture here where not as much is being built.
Yeah.
And so I think there are some things and some offsite things. You know, Dell has some interesting hackathon stuff and different people are trying it. But I'd love to see, this is now my 15th year, but I'd love to see as I keep going, if we got back to actually, you know, coming up with an idea on Thursday or Friday and, you know, by the end of South by, the concentration of incredible people came together and did something. And that doesn't have to be for the social good or charitable. It could be, you know, could we come up with a better way to, you know, share information about tacos? Like, it doesn't matter, but just think of the collective brain power here from so many different industries.
Yeah.
Mostly we socialize. We're not working together. There's a little of that over the next few days, but mostly it's a lot of talk and a lot of show and tell. Some very cool stuff, but a lot of talk and show and tell.
Brian Reich, Managing Director, Little M Media. The book, Shift and Reset. We got to get you on Triangulation to talk a little bit about that in the near future.
Anytime.
Yeah.
And I would speak at the opening of a paper bag if invited. So.
What is your talk at South by going to be?
We're actually having what we call a game storm tomorrow, which is sort of a gamified brainstorm to come up with new and interesting ways to start addressing the global refugee crisis.
Oh, see, that's an example. That's exactly what you were talking about.
We're trying to take advantage of the incredible people here to have a different conversation than the humanitarian sector is going to be able to have on its own, because we need the help. It's a big deal.
And the Gamergate all day. I don't want to call it the Gamergate event, but the event about harassment, online harassment. Is that, when is that?
That's been all day today. I was there earlier. It's really good. You know, first of all, there was a lot of tension, controversy yes. about whether or not it would happen.
Yes.
There was some of that, I think, at the beginning of the day, people kind of still needing to validate or acknowledge that this conversation was necessary. As the day's gone on, you know, I think we're starting to get down to not just saying, you know, you and the tech community need to shut down these conversations more, or you and the, you know, human side need to toughen up or whatever. They're starting, I think, to be some convergence and almost some solution solving. It's not going to get solved today, but I think people are going to come out of here not just having had a conversation with their own, but, you know, potentially coming up with maybe a hit list of things to really start trying to get different actors in this space to do. It's the beginning of a really important conversation that, you know, unfortunately would not have happened if not for the bad things, but now maybe we're going to make something good out of it.
Well, that's the opportunity at South By, is to bring many parties together and to talk, to meet and to talk. So I think that that's a really good thing. Hey, Brian, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day today to
thank you.
To
and us. Hey, you know, come next year. Maybe I'll see you both next year. Come
mind.
On.
I would like to. Let's go, shall we?
Done.
Deal. Thanks,
Deal.
Brian.
Thank you.
Now, while that goes on in Austin, there's something going on in Korea that is of great interest to people who play games. It was 20 years ago, 1997, that IBM's Deep Blue beat the champion of the world at chess, Garry Kasparov. And we went through the chess community went through a very depressing couple of years, because if a computer, if a machine can beat the best player in the world at a game, well, what is it worth playing the game? We've survived, but now the Go community's turn is here. Go is an even more challenging game. It took 20 more years to make a computer that could win at Go. I think we have one joining us right now from the American Go Association, Andy Okun. He's in Seoul right now. Are you a little depressed, Andy?
I'm both sad and excited at the same time.
Yeah. So Lee Sedol, who is a 9-dan Go player, 18-time world champion. I mean, this isn't a question of a weaker player getting beaten. This is a good player.
He's a legend.
Yeah.
A legend. He's playing a 5-game match against AlphaGo, which is a computer program created by a company called DeepMind. Google bought them a while ago, so it's a Google company. DeepMind... AlphaGo, 5-game match, has won the first 3 games. Now, I play Go, but I'm not a Go. I don't understand Go like you do, Andy. Did DeepMind play well?
Yes. it outplayed Lee Sedol. You know, you can talk a little bit about the psychological stress of it, and that we don't have a lot of game records of AlphaGo to study from, but no, it outplayed a lot of pros and a lot of strong players, and a lot of analysts were looking at these games. There you see Michael Redmond, who is an American born in the States, but became a 9-dan pro in Japan, and he's a very experienced commentator and analyst.
I watched this commentary on these games, and by the way, it's on YouTube. They've been streaming it live, and it was fascinating, but particularly fascinating to watch as AlphaGo started to move ahead.
Yes. And actually, the point that was in the picture there was where he started, the computer started to move ahead in game 3. And that was a depressing moment, because at some level, we were all, I think, rooting for Lee Sedol. Let me give you a sense. We don't know how strong AlphaGo is from the 3 games we've seen so far, except that it seems to be stronger than Lee Sedol has played this week. You know, in Go, you're attempting to surround territory on the board and get the advantage over the opponent that way. And at the end, if nobody resigns, you count up the places on the board that you've surrounded, and if you have a slight margin over your opponent, you win the game. But in the middle of the game, you might be far ahead in estimated territory count. And we, most human players, use how far ahead you are as a proxy for the likelihood you're going to win the game. If I'm 50 points ahead, the other person should resign. If I'm 20 points ahead, I'm probably going to win. If I'm 2 points ahead, I need to be very careful. If I'm 20 points behind, I need to take risks. AlphaGo seems to directly calculate, not seems, it does, directly calculate from a board position the chances that it's going to win. It doesn't care how far ahead it is. So if it's 20 points ahead but can slightly increase its probability of winning by giving you back 18 of those points, it will.
Wow.
And Michael Redmond has started over the course of these games to figure out that Lee Sedol is behind because AlphaGo plays what appear to us to be slow, slack, not that great moves.
Early in the first game, it played a move that commentators widely thought, this is a bad move.
Yeah.
Turned out not to be.
Yeah. Or, yeah, essentially, yes. And I know at the start of the first game, there were three moves in a row, or three moves out of four, that I know my teacher would, you know, smack me for making.
Right.
Just, you know, push from behind on the fifth line, you're going to lose immediately doing that. And AlphaGo did and won the game.
Amazing.
So, Andy, since you are obviously an experienced Go player, how do you think Lee feels at this moment, right now, with the world watching, that he is literally...
He's representing humankind.
He's representing
and
you, Andy.
Lost.
He is representing not me, not Leo, but
all
you.
Of us. No, everybody.
How do you think he feels knowing that he, you know, that he's currently lost to AI right now?
He actually said in the press conference after the game yesterday that he has been feeling the stress.
Yeah.
I don't know what it must feel like. At this point, I think I hope it's clear to him that this isn't just, you know, him. That there may not be anyone else out there. You know, there is a player in China who's been talking about wanting to play AlphaGo because he actually has, over the last year or two, a very good record against Lee Sedol. And so certainly that match is one we'll look to. But it's not so great a margin that we know, you know, that it's a huge difference.
Oh, wow.
Do you think it'd be possible to recalibrate your strategy as a human player in the light of what we've seen AlphaGo do and play better?
Mm.
I think so, but that's also something we don't know yet.
Right.
I'm sure it is. You know, there's a certain amount of sadness because we liked the idea that we had this game that supercomputers were not good at playing.
Right.
A few months, I took up the game at the age of 40 in 2002, and that's old to start in some senses, but not too old. And within a few months, I could beat the best computers that were out there. They were not impressive. And obviously something new needed to be invented to do it, and they invented new things. And it got stronger so fast that to me it was clear this was going to happen in the next year or two, no matter what.
Oh, wow.
We thought in chess that, you know, it was very demoralizing when Kasparov got beaten by Deep Blue. But we've come to accept our new overlords. And most serious chess players now work with computers in both training and study. It's almost a symbiotic partnership. And it didn't end the game, the fact that the game was solvable, that in fact, you know, there was a proper, correct move at all times. Go has always seemed to be a little more intuitive and ethereal and a lot less calculated, you know? Although, I guess you throw enough horsepower at any problem like this, it's ultimately deterministic. If you could calculate all the moves, you could figure out what the moves were.
Yeah.
Neither chess nor Go is, I think, truly solvable in this universe because they're
so many odd possibilities.
But after sadness, the first reaction of certainly all of the pros I've spoken to and a lot of the other players is get me a copy.
Yeah, I want to play this.
And they want to know because you know, the depressing thought, aside from sadness that we've lost the mystique and that Lee Sedol is getting hammered this week, the sadness is we have 2,500 years of knowledge and game records and proverbs and ideas and heuristics. And somebody said in the middle of the second game, Lee Sedol was playing very well and it looked like he had chances. Somebody said he's ahead. Or if he's not ahead, then what do we know about this game?
Yeah, it's a mystery.
the pros want a copy of this software or some version of it.
Well, good news. And they probably will get one, I'm sure. I mean, Fritz and other chess-playing games based on Deep Blue have been widely available, very inexpensive. They can whip the pants off of pretty much anybody. I imagine AlphaGo will make the same transition to a consumer
product. So, you know, a lot of people are thinking this is kind of exciting because there are going to be new things we've never thought of before.
Yeah.
And we like patterns and shapes and strategies and all the rest of it. They give us pleasure to see and apply. And there have been some moves that AlphaGo has made that have, you know, really impressed people. That may not; those moves may not be why AlphaGo won, in a sense, because in all three games there was this sensation anyway, as you were watching, that gradually the human player was falling behind. Was just not getting any traction at all with what he was trying to do, and that the computer's moves were quite efficient, sometimes gentle, but very efficient.
Where do you see this going, Leo? I mean, we've got 2011 Watson out here beating people
at Jeopardy.
There'll
never be a computer that can win at baseball, I'm sure. No, will be, right?
You think so? Where do you see it going, Andy?
20 years from now, the robot baseball team that beats the San Francisco Giants.
I don't know about that. I think the DeepMind team, I think they'll keep working on this, but they've said they're going to turn to other things.
Yeah.
And I would love them to focus on medicine, which is one of the things they've said they're going to do.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this kind of pattern detection software being used on diagnosis would be amazing.
And would be.
Make our lives better.
We should point out that's the reason.
I think in 20 years, the only games we'll be able to beat computers at are Calvin Ball and Morning Crescent.
I think you're right.
know those references, but
this
would be something where the computer can't know the rules.
Or no computer scientist cares to try to solve it.
I mean,
one of the reasons that Go was chosen and why they worked so hard on it is because of the value that you gain out of doing this kind of software and the things that you learn. Hey, it's really great to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us. Andy Yalkin is the president of the American Go Association. The good news is I think this will spur an interest in Go in the United States, which is long overdue.
Definitely.
Absolutely. You know, there's a lot of other exciting things going on in Go. And in fact, just a few years ago, we started to, because we had so many strong young players from years of boosting youth Go, we started picking our own professionals. And some of them are beating professionals in Asia in tournaments now. And we have a lot of exciting stuff going on.
Yeah.
A lot of people love to play. We have amateur tournaments all over the place. So I think it is an exciting time in Go. Here, Europe, Asia, everywhere.
It's a beautiful game. A really, really wonderful game. And Andy, I'm glad you could share it with us. Sometime you and I will play some Calvin Ball together. I have some rules I'd like to make up myself. And
okay.
He's talking about Calvin and Hobbes. Hey, it's great to talk to you, Andy. Thanks for joining us.
Very good. Thanks.
Andy Yalkin of the American Go Association. Yeah, we live in really amazing times.
I would just love to see you give it a go.
I'm not a good Go player, but I'll tell you what. I'll play some blindfold chess a little bit later on.
I say we do it.
You want to do it?
Yeah.
All right.
We'll do that right after line dancing.
Oh, are you going to teach me a line dance? So one of the things Liberty does, you know what? I want you to do that on the show, maybe a little later on. Well, Liberty, you do this line dancing thing every week with tech entrepreneurs and stuff. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I host an event called Tech Two-Step. Yeah, I know. It's kind of ridiculous. Thank you so much. It is, I have an obsession with country western line dancing.
Because you're from Texas.
No! I don't like when people say that. It's not because I'm from Texas. It's because country western line dancing is amazing.
And you're from Texas.
It's not.
So
it's just amazing.
So if I want to do this Texas Two Step, it's in Oakland every week. Yeah,
it is. It's at Lake Merritt.
Lake Merritt.
Yeah. So and it's called line dancing on the lake, and anybody can go. It's really fun, and we also do line dancing Thursdays and Fridays at Jack London Square at this really cool country bar. You won't believe it, in Oakland.
Is there a website? Is there somewhere I should go to find out more about website?
Yeah, you can just go to libertymadison.com and I have it there. Yeah, I mean, it's self-promotion.
It sounds like fun.
I need you to go to libertymadison.com.
You're not going
to
let me go, are you? You're not going to let me go on that. You're not going to give me a pass at
all.
That's
our thing.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to answer a call for help. And Megan Maroney has an Amazon Echo tip. Have you played with the Echo yet?
I have.
I love it.
I love it.
I know.
I said it first.
I love it. I wish I could play Go with my Echo or chess. Maybe I will someday. You know, one thing I use the Echo for all the time, and we have an Echo in the kitchen, is a timer. I use it this morning. I'll set something, and I'll say, Echo, set a timer for 20 minutes. And it goes, okay, timer will ring in 20 minutes. It's so awesome. I like to cook. I have to be honest with you. A lot of times I don't get to cook because I'm working late. I don't got to go shopping. That's where Blue Apron comes in. I am so happy. When we get home and our Blue Apron box is on the doorstep, I know in there are the recipes for three different meals that I can cook for my family that will make them so happy, so excited. It's a refrigerated box. Everything's fresh. The meats are fresh. The fish is fresh. The produce is from local farms, picked at the peak of freshness. It's good stuff. And the recipes are really unusual. And that's kind of fun because you're cooking something new using new ingredients. But you get to choose them. You can go to the website and say, I want that, I want that, I want that. How about this? Roasted cauliflower panzanella with fennel, piave cheese, and sliced almonds. Okay, wait a minute. How about, look at that Cuban sandwiches there with sweet plantain and kale salad. Man, every meal is delicious. You can prepare them in 40 minutes or less, 500 to 700 calories per portion. They're healthful, and they're less than $10 a meal. And once you cook it, you can cook it again. You're going to learn how to use a plantain, for instance. And once you understand how to do that, you can use that forever. It's like a cooking class that comes to your door every week. I want you to try it. It's delicious. It's good for you. Your family will love you. Great for date night. BlueApron.com/twit. Check out this week's menu. Get your first two meals free. BlueApron.com/twit. Is there a Blue Apron in your future? Check it out today. All right, call for help coming up in just a little bit. Liberty's going to give some lucky person a social media makeover.
I love that. We should do that.
That's actually a great idea.
Exactly. Like, that can be a thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Deal. Done. We're going to work on that. It's a new segment. Right, social media makeovers. Over. Like, that site looks... Your Twitter feed is a mess. We're gonna get.
And can we do it like this? Is a mess.
Is a mess.
What if we.
Okay, we're gonna do that. We're gonna have the first episode of our social media makeovers in just a bit. But first, if you like the Amazon Echo, this is an Echo. You're gonna love the Dot, Megan Maroney.
Hello and welcome to Twitay this week in the Amazon Echo. I am Megan Maroney. If you already have an Amazon Echo, I suggest maybe turning it off for this segment unless you wanted to order a bunch of stuff for you. Amazon now has not one but two additional Echo-like devices. There's the Echo Dot and the Amazon Tap. Let's start with the Echo Dot, which can only be ordered using your Amazon Echo. At first, there was a workaround that would let you order a Dot through your iPhone, but Amazon shut that off. Wah, wah. Here's how it works. Alexa, order the Echo Dot.
Echo Dot. It's available for pre-order and will be delivered by June 14th. It's $97.41 total. To order it, tell me your voice code.
No, thank you.
Okay. I won't order it.
If you want to buy one, enter your code to purchase it. I suggest that you always make sure Amazon asks for a code before you order anything, especially if you have children in your house. The Dot is designed for audiophiles who already have Bluetooth speakers. I think the speakers in the current Echo are just fine. But if you already have speakers that you like, or if you never plan to use the Echo Dot to listen to music, then the $99 version is probably for you. Next is the Amazon Tap. The Tap costs $129. That's $50 less than the standard Amazon Echo. The Tap is portable, and it isn't always listening to you, but instead works when you push the button. All three of these new devices are available to order now, but none of them are in stock. It's all part of Amazon's secret plan to control the market as carefully as possible. You can only order one dot at a time and only two total per customer. Otherwise, I would order a bunch for you. Currently, the standard Echo is in stock again only on March 25th. My Echo Dot is available Thursday, March 31st, but that's because I ordered it right away as soon as I could. And the Amazon Tap has an estimated delivery of April 27th, 2016. I am Megan Maroney. I host Tech News Today and iOS Today. Back to you, Leo.
And she's invented a new show this week in an Amazon Echo. Twitay? All right. I think it's probably a good idea. We probably should do it. I've been Lisa's been saying that too. I have three Echoes at home. I have a fourth Echo here, and I ordered two dots. I think I have an Echo problem. Is that such a thing?
I don't think that's a thing.
It is now. It is now. Let's do it. It's time for a call for help. On the line, Diami. Diami, where are you calling from? Besides your basement.
New York.
Oh, Iceland, New York, and the basement.
My workshop.
Wow. This looks like serious work is going on. Are you a woodworker?
I am. That's a dust cyclone you see behind me.
That is awesome. What kind of stuff do you make?
I make typically furniture. Right now, I'm actually in the process of making a bar top arcade cabinet for Jason. But I make
You're that Diami.
Yes. I'm that Diami.
So that's exciting. So I should explain.
I don't know the story.
This.
Okay.
Yeah. So did Jason see yours or he saw somebody else's?
No, Jason was on and talking about it, and I could see the hesitation in the woodworking aspect of it. And yeah. Aaron was explaining how easy it is to build, and Jason just seemed reluctant to get into the woodworking. So I reached out to Jason. I said, Jason, I can handle the woodworking, no problem. You do the electronics, and we'll do it together. And he said, let's go for it.
Perfect. So you're going to do the woodwork cabinet that will he'll put the software in of his new MAME gaming machine.
Exactly.
In fact, we're going to do that on this show, I think, right?
Yeah. Once I finally get it out of my shop, yes.
All right. So what can we do to help you since you're helping us?
Well, I host a woodworking podcast, and we seem to have plateaued in terms of listenership. And I've come to the conclusion that it's probably because while I'm very active on Twitter and Instagram and Google+, I have personally shied away from Facebook. So what I was really looking for is help with a primer on Facebook promotion.
So first, what's the name of your podcast? I'm going to help him right now. You didn't plug your podcast.
I was just going to say that. Hello, at Liberty Madison. It's going to answer your question. What's the name of your podcast?
Why aren't you wearing a T-shirt or something?
Well, I am.
Why is there no sign in the back?
Oh, he is. Oh, there it
is. It's not on camera. It doesn't count.
Yeah, it doesn't count. It doesn't. What is the name of
the podcast? Is the Modern Woodworkers Association.
Sounds awesome. Okay. So, Liberty, it's time for Trademark Twit TV 2016, your social media
makeover. No
big buildup and not much.
No one did anything.
The Modern Woodworker.
Modern Woodworkers Association.
Association.
Yes.
Okay. So,
okay,
first of all, finding it on Google's got to be easy to do, and I think you actually have done pretty well. That really isn't something you can completely control because you've got to get people to link to you. You've already done 90 episodes. That's great.
Yeah, so let's see. So, Diami, you mentioned that you're pretty active on every other platform except for Facebook. Is there a particular reason why you decided to shy away from Facebook and not really promote there?
Originally, I saw social media as a complete waste of time, and I took to Twitter to basically claim my name. My Twitter handle is at Diami Plotkey. I actually couldn't get at Diami.
Wow. I just looked up the name Diami on the Urban Dictionary, and I know why you couldn't get it. It's hot.
Well,
don't do that at home. Yeah. Kids, don't do that. Do not look up. First of all, don't use the Urban Dictionary at all. But if you're going to do it, don't look up Diami.
What's your Facebook page?
My Facebook page, at this point, I only have a personal profile, and it is it's Diami Plotkey.
Want to promote your podcast.
Wait a minute. I think it's interesting on his website. You're all in on Google+. Oh, dear.
I'm not laughing out loud
that
at that.
That seemed like a good idea at the time, didn't it?
It did.
It's still a good idea. It's still a great idea.
It shouldn't be your only social media.
Exactly. It's still a great idea just because, you know, it helps you in ranking in your algorithms. But I'm just curious as to why you don't have a Facebook page that's separate for your brand identity for the podcast.
So you can do that right away, right? If you already have a Facebook name, like your name.
He already has his personal account.
It says set up a page and you do it and you will own it, right?
Exactly. And he can be the administrator for it. He can actually do that while he's on this call.
It's that easy.
It's super easy, and he should do that. So that would be step one.
What content should he be putting on the page that he doesn't already put on his personal page?
Well, one, this is going to be dedicated specifically to this niche of woodworkers.
So put woodworking stuff exclusively.
Right. So we're gonna really focus in on that. But I think one of the things that you can do just immediately out of the box is to engage your existing audience on all these other platforms, because you said you have a great following on everything else, just not Facebook. So why don't you route them over? Have you...
First of all, let me give him some advice here. So I'm on the creative page on Facebook, and you do that right from your page. Should he be a local business, a company, a brand, a product, an artist, entertainment, cause, or community? Should we say entertainment?
How do you see it, Diami? What direction do you see your podcast going?
Are you going to sell stuff?
Yeah. What...
No, we're not going to sell things to listeners. At some point, we may take advertising, but that would be the only sales we do in the podcast.
I think community might be the one to go for, right?
You think community would be the best?
Rather than entertainment. Because entertainment's like a one-way street. Like, I entertain, and you sit there and shut up. Community is what you want, right? Especially in podcasting. You want people to talk back.
I would agree with that, because he's trying to build his community in the podcasting space, but also in the woodworking space, right?
Yes.
And you're trying to build dialogue and conversation around that. So I would
definitely go with community. Okay.
Are you following this? Can we see your screen? Let's screencast you. I want to make sure you get this done.
We want to make sure Diami's doing it instead of just listening and
everyone
nodding.
Everyone listens. No one does it. I'm going to follow up with you, and you'll be like, you know, I was going to get around to that whole Facebook thing. So, yeah, let's get you started on that.
So should he post every day? Should he post every 10 minutes? How often do you need to create new content on a page?
Well, at this point, because we're starting from scratch at this point, because
he doesn't even have
a page. So that's a great question, Leo. Diami, question for you.
Yes.
Do you have content that is solely curated for your woodshop audience, for your woodworking audience, aside from your podcast? Because you're just not going to upload your podcast to your Facebook. So do you have any curated content?
The vast majority of what I post on all the other forms of social media is woodworking related. I really don't post about anything but that. So I'm
perfect.
Sure I can come up with something woodworking.
I think you can. And of course, you're going to post your podcast there. And it's interesting. Is it an audio podcast or video?
It's audio.
So this is an interesting hack that people sometimes do on Facebook. Facebook only lets you post videos. You can't just post audio. But I've noticed some big podcasts like WNYC, which does a lot of podcasts, lately have been posting their audio podcasts on their Facebook page with just a static image or maybe some text. And I really would suggest you do that, right? Because Facebook can generate a lot of traffic to videos. You post videos on your Facebook?
I do. I post everything on my Facebook. Yeah. So feel free to reach out to me over at facebook.com/TheLibertyMadison. But while we're on your particular... woodworking.
But you're the chat room is telling me you're a really good woodworker, Diami. Like, this is... You're good. So
I try.
So in the podcast, what do you cover? Do you cover techniques? Like, could you do a, there you go, Nick's Burger Board. So look at that.
Oh, wow.
That's gorgeous. So I would love to see
definitely post things like this.
Tips on your Facebook page. Remember, Facebook, people come there for quick hits. They don't come there so much for Google Plus. It's a lot about discussion, or you'll post something up there and you'll get feedback and it'll be going back and forth. On Facebook, you want to get people to share what you've posted. There's no point in posting on Facebook unless somebody's sharing it.
You definitely want to get people to share. And I think for him, correct me if I'm wrong, Diami, but you want them off of Facebook. You want them to come to your podcast because you want to increase how many downloads that you have. Because how many downloads do you have per month right now?
We're averaging about 2,000 an episode.
Okay, that's great for a podcast. So I think what he wants to do is create content that will have a call to action.
He wants to double that, triple.
Yeah, you want to double that, but you want to
But it starts by putting something on Facebook that people are going to tell other people about and build that audience.
Yes,
right? Yeah.
And you don't want to necessarily come at them with advertisement. That is a no.
Give them stuff they can use.
Do not do that.
News you can use.
It's give. That's what you want. Give,
I agree.
Give, ask. So you want to give them content that's either going to be a woodworking tip. And one thing that I would suggest, too, is in order to grow your community is not just focus on existing woodworkers. Because for me, for example, I'm not a woodworker. But if you position it in different different contexts, maybe you position it as a leisurely pastime or a new activity to do. You could introduce it to a new audience, and that could also grow your community. And not just within the woodworking community. That's how you can actually create your audience.
Give, ask is an interesting thing you said.
Yeah.
This is a kind of a meme that a lot of social media people say, give, then ask. You only ask once every four, five, six, seven times. Gary Vaynerchuk, one of our good friends and an early podcaster, certainly a king of social media.
Yes.
He says, it's jab, 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 right hook. That's actually the name of one of his books.
Yes.
But it's the same idea, which is, what you don't want to be too pushy.
But one thing I love about Gary is he's straight up about it. He says, you know what, we're not Mother Teresa. We're here to sell products. There needs to be no confusion about that.
Right.
But you need to add value and you need to give.
So that, value.
That is
now,
exactly it.
Give me something.
Exactly.
Okay.
So now he can ask them, go to my podcast.
And you know better than we do what it is that gets people, your crowd, excited. You know, maybe it's just, here's the perfect miter. I don't know. I'm making up something. Mm-hmm. What's the best planing tool or hand planing tips or whatever? There it is. This beautiful plane. Look at that. The Stanley number 71. That you want to put something on there. People will share. People will say, that's great. I can use that. But also, I want to show that to my friends.
Sharing is so important.
The more they share, the more people see it, right?
It is. For someone who, again, may not be in the woodworking community, if someone shared it, I'm introduced now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you might be interested because that Stanley 71 is just beautiful. It's like a beautiful tool. And so it has value just of itself, even if you're not a woodworker.
It's adding value, and it lets people know that, you know, there's more people than IKEA out there making furniture.
Yeah. Although, I'm telling you, an IKEA tip of the day might not be a bad idea.
They have screws and parts. This is amazing. I'm impressed by you because you didn't come in a flat box. So, I mean, yes, great. Great job.
My friend Tim Street, who was one of the original podcasters, and a great video guy who really knows his video. He told me, and I've mentioned this on the show before, that the videos go viral when they tap more than one emotion.
Yes.
Not just funny, not just sad, not just exciting, but mix some emotions in. So there's things you can do in your posts.
You have to layer it.
You want to do funny posts, for instance. You know, it'd be fun to have the woodworking mistake of the week. Like just a
would be amazing.
A dopey thing. Because, again, that's something people who are not into woodworking
might share. I just shared that in my head, just so you know that, Leo. I just shared it, and I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Okay.
Just
thanks.
Right when you said that. That was amazing. But you're absolutely right, because the number, a study shows that what's going to make your content shareable, and it's going to be whether it's funny or kind of, you know, as a tearjerker, or informative.
Right.
That's pretty much it. But number one was humor.
But if you can mix the three.
Layer it. Go straight
to Photoshop. That's even better, because then you're going to grab people and they're going to come away with it saying, I learned something. It's really a great
and value add.
I hate these link baity things like, you know, George used a number 73 grit sandpaper, Ben. You won't believe what happened next. Don't do that. Is there a 73 grit sandpaper? Probably not.
They tend to go in full decimal.
Okay.
Full, groups of 10. But.
Okay.
Points is well taken.
You know what I'm saying, though.
Yeah.
All right. This is fun. You know, I really want to underscore that word community. We started you off saying make a community page. That's really, in my opinion, having done this for a little while, what podcasting is all about. It's not the same thing as the old media that I used to do, which is really standing there talking at people.
Mm-hmm.
It's having a conversation, and it's involving your community in what you do. And I always think the better you can do that, the more satisfying your show will be, and the more successful it will be.
Well, going forward, that's going to be your only opportunity and only option. Study shows that when you're engaging with the millennial audience, no one wants to be marketed to. They want to be involved in the conversation, hence the popularity of YouTube when it comes to adverts and advertisements. So you're absolutely right, Leo.
Yeah. I think this is fun. And, of course, the next best thing would be getting on a show, maybe a successful podcast, and telling people about your podcast and pretending you had a question so that you – oh, wait a minute, you already – no. I'm just teasing. I think this is great. The Modern Woodworkers Woodworking or Woodworkers?
Modern Woodworkers Association.
Modern Woodworkers Association.com. Mm-hmm. You know, woodworking is one of those hobbies that consumes people. That gets them excited. It makes them happy. And I think you've got 2,000 listeners. I think there's 200,000 people in the United States who would want to listen to your show, right?
And so that's
your goal. Get to those people.
Get to those people. And to play off of what you just said, Leo, there is a podcast that's woodworking-based that has over 200,000 subscribers and downloads. So I would follow
their
model.
Is that the Wood Whisperer?
No.
No?
No.
Do you know about the Wood Whisperer?
I don't.
Oh, I know Mark.
Did I just whisper?
Mark is a great guy.
The Wood Whisperer. So I would definitely follow their tips and follow their models as well. It doesn't hurt to, you see something that's already working, you don't have to reinvent
the wheel. Yeah, people copy us all the time.
Inspired by Twitch.
I'm going to build a studio there.
Homage. Yes. Homage. No. Okay, let me give you some advice. Don't build a studio ever. Ever build a studio. Hey, it's really nice to meet you, Diami. I'm really looking forward to seeing the main cabinet. Can you turn your camera a little bit towards it?
There's not all that much to see, but I'll turn it over there, and you see that row of clamps. That is the the control panel is tipping up. You can kind of see the holes through the clamps, and then the monitor panel is laying horizontally underneath the clamps. So what you're seeing there is the marquee is glued to the top of the cabinet. So,
how exciting.
In a couple of weeks, it'll actually be a real thing, and it's taking a little too long to make, but I will be turning that around as quick as I can.
And is your house full of the furniture you've made?
Alas, it is not. Each of my kids have a piece I've made for them, but no. Most of the furniture I make leaves the house.
You know what they say, the cobbler's children have no shoes. It's what they say. I don't know why.
Dion, before we let you go, are you vlogging your experience while you're building your actual products?
I'm not vlogging. I'm sharing it.
That's a good idea.
Diami, no Facebook page, no. Okay, so I'm going to follow up with you. We got to get this going.
Wouldn't it be fun to see, Diami. You know, day three, the cabinet, and just show the progress.
I want to see the process. I want to see how he's doing
this. Because I should do more vlogging. Tell me a little bit about vlogging. That's just making a little video, kind of a personal video.
Right.
You know, who is the rapper who, like, is the king of Snapchat now? Do you know who I'm talking about? Who is it?
Oh, the DJ Khaled guy?
DJ Khaled. First of all, 2 years ago, somebody says, oh, you should be on Snapchat. He said, oh, that's dopey. I don't ever want to do it. Now he's got, like, millions of followers watching him. Should he do Snapchat? Should Diami do Snapchat?
Diami should be everywhere. Diami should be on Snapchat. He should definitely, without a doubt, be on YouTube. And he should be vlogging this entire process because it's one thing to see your finished product, but it's another thing to be a part of it, be a part of the process, and that is going to build what Leo just spoke about, community. So that's going to build community around it, and it's not just going to be an object. It's not going to be a sofa. It's just not going to be a chair. It's going to be something people got to experience.
Now, I'm
going to
give you something that will reassure you, because this is what stops me from vlogging.
Okay, what is that?
And I bet you're the same, Diami. We do quality work.
Hey.
We do. It's lit. It's got sound and stuff. Now, this is the number one guy on Snapchat. It's got 12 million followers. This is big on Snapchat.
Some people can't handle success. I can. I know what it comes with. Some people can't handle it. I can. The key to more success.
He's in the shower.
You don't vlog in the shower?
You think I'm joking. This guy is huge. This guy has made a huge success. I mean, literally huge. He's made a huge success of his music business, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's got gold records, and it's because of that. I think you could. So don't feel like, oh, I have to make it. This is what stops me.
Okay.
Oh, I have to make it perfect. I have to have something to say.
Leo, that's coming from a different generation where you think you have to have a studio or you've got to have the lighting and you've got to have this, you've got to have that. No, you need an iPhone or you just need your phone, and that's what people respond to because they feel like they're part of the journey and you're not talking at them. So
you could be the next DJ Khaled.
That could be you.
But don't do this. That was crazy. This was insane. This was megalomania. This was $1 million down the chute. That's what this was. Don't do this. That's just nuts. You don't need that anymore, right? This is old school,
right,
Liberty?
You really don't.
It's old school.
That's why I brought it up. So be sure, please, to get on. Once you get your Facebook page set up, please jump on Snapchat. I'm sure you already have an account there. Please jump on
Snapchat. Should I be doing that too?
Should you be snapping?
Yeah.
I've snapped this twice.
You know?
Since we've been standing right here.
This is why I don't snap. Let me tell you, because it's gone in a day. It's like there's no permanence. You're just making this thing a throwaway.
They changed it.
Yeah, I know you can keep it, but nobody does that. It's not supposed to be saved. It's just like garbage. It's like fish wrap. Because the people are, I can save it, but the people who are watching it, that's like, it's over. Okay, that's it. It's done.
This is true. But you can save it and send it out to a different platform.
You know what never happens on Snapchat?
What's that?
Wrap it up. Wrap it up. We got to get it over with. Hey, thank you, Diami.
Thank you so much, Diami.
It's so great to talk to you. Good luck. Yeah, Modern Woodworkers Podcast. It's a parent woodworker association. Modern Woodworkers. Apparently, his stuff is phenomenal. People rave over his stuff. And that's, to me, it's funny. There's so many good musicians. So many talented, balloon animal makers.
Yeah.
There's so many people with great abilities, but they don't know how to market. They don't know how to put themselves out there.
If you don't know how to market it,
people don't know
about it, it doesn't matter if it's the best thing ever.
Well, it might matter to you. But it doesn't. But it's not going to.
If the world can't see it, who knows?
Right. I think we need to spread the word. You're going to have to help us from now on.
We'll have to do that.
You can help me be
I love our little spin.
DJ Khaled of Snapchat.
Upcoming DJ Khaled 2017. Dropping live Leo Laporte.
What makes him so good? Are you watching? You follow him?
Absolutely not. But I know his success.
Kara doesn't follow. But everybody knows. It's like it's the hottest thing.
Yes.
I'm just, you know what? I'm old. It's over. Florence Ion will be our, oh, by the way. We're going to have a great time next week, too, because Florence Ion, that flow. Co-host of All About Android will be our guest. If you have Android questions, if you have anything you'd like to know from Flo, here's how you can get on the show next week.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
All right, I'm going to Snapchat. Okay, I'm going to Snapchat right now.
Okay.
So every time, you know when I Snapchat?
I'm ready.
When you're here. That's the only time I ever Snapchat. So what do I do? So I just, do I press and hold?
Yeah, you just press and hold. I'm going to Snapchat.
How does this Snapchat work? What is Snapchat? Who is that tech girl? Why is she standing there? Why did I build $1 million studio? Okay, there. Now, and then, okay, and now I just press.
Now we got it.
Oh, we're going to. Oh, that's both of us going.
I Snapchatted your Snapchat.
Wait a minute, did you do it sideways? You did it sideways? That's not Snapchat.
Yes, it is.
You gotta do it in vertical mode like DJ Khaled. What are you doing it sideways for?
Because I might want to use it on a different platform.
That's my other problem with Snapchat. So then what? Is it just going to keep making noise like that? Now what do I
just
do?
Send
do
it
I
out.
Press the plus button? Do I add it to my story? Is that what I should do?
Yeah, just add it to your story.
Add it to my story. Oh, shut up. Okay. Oh, and look, DJ Khaled's posted. I'm just curious. What?
Let's watch that. Let's watch it.
Look at that. Wait a minute. That was Ray Liotta. What? What's he doing there? See, this is what I mean.
Wow.
This guy is huge. This guy's a superstar. And look how bad that looks. I've learned nothing.
That looks great.
Where's his lighting guy? Where's his
gaffer?
Where's
his team?
Where's his grip? Where's his producer? Where's his director? What kind of... All right. I got to pay for the studio. Do you mind? Okay. We're going to take a commercial break. We'll have more with Liberty Madison. And yes, this guy's going to do 35 blindfold chess games. We're going to talk about blindfold chess and build a little more of the ultimate virtual reality gaming machine. But first, a little word from Braintree. If you're a mobile app developer and you want to have payments in your app, okay, you got a couple of choices. You could write it yourself. No, bad. No, don't. Because it's tough. It's not easy. And you want your customers, you want your users to feel comfortable with it. Or you could go to Braintree, put in 10 lines of code, and suddenly your app's taking every kind of payment. Period. Everything from Venmo to Bitcoin. Bitcoin, yeah, of course, credit cards, Apple Pay, Android Pay. Braintree is an amazing solution. It makes it easy to put mobile payments into your app. That's why Airbnb uses it. That's why Uber uses it. That's why GitHub uses it. Pinterest uses it, too. You know, they recently acquired Modest, a great company. My friend Harper Reed runs it. And he's the king of something they call contextual commerce. I actually talked to Harper and I asked him, tell me about contextual commerce. What is it? How does it make buying easier and give the customer what they want? Here's what he said.
The main way to make a better commerce experience is very simple, and it is just to make sure that you're always keeping in mind the intent of the consumer. How do you create that interface that allows for people to A, be comfortable, not feel like it's creepy, B, feel like, yeah, I trust this merchant or I trust this retailer, and C, actually get what they want? So we thought, you're on a mobile phone, and you run out of coffee, that's probably when you want coffee. And make it easy. So they just click a button that says, I want more coffee, and the coffee arrives. That's really what contextual commerce is about. It's about that context of when the user wants it, where do they want it, and how do we give it to them.
And the Bible pins on Pinterest come from Braintree. It's this idea that this is kind of modern. You don't leave a site to buy something. It's there. It's on the site. You press a button and it's yours. It's like Uber. You don't have to go to the shopping cart to get out of an Uber. You just say, I'm done, and you get out, and it pays. Braintree's fast payouts or continuous support mean you'll always be ready. Whether you're earning your first dollar or your billions, you'll see fewer abandoned carts. You'll see more sales. You'll see best-in-class mobile experience and fraud protection. It's awesome. A full-stack payment solution, simple integration, customer service that's without equal, fast payouts. I want you to check it out for yourself. By the way, your first $50,000 in transactions are fee-free. BraintreePayments.com/NSS. All right, we're building the ultimate virtual reality gaming machine because I should tell the producers, not only am I getting not one but two Oculus Rifts, I just bought the HTC Vive. So we are going to have, I don't know if we're going to, this thing, we needs to be a monster so we can all be in it at the same time, right? That means we're going to need a lot of RAM. We'll talk about putting the RAM in, but first here's Ian Thompson. He's got some shopping advice for you. Watch.
Hi, I'm Ian Thompson, a reporter with The Register, and here's another technology tip for Twit TV. Now, if you're booking pretty much booking or buying anything online, there's an important thing that you should consider. Every time you actually check out a site, you're going to get a cookie unless you've got your browser set up particularly tightly, and that will tell the company that you're interested in a particular product or service. So if you're actually shopping around for a holiday or for a new device, go into incognito mode. This will generally show you the lowest price available because the company doesn't have any kind of data on what you were looking for in the first place. Whereas if you look with your standard browser at, say, a flight and then go back the next day and look again, the company involved might decide, right, you're more interested in that flight, therefore we're going to jack the price up a little bit. It's also important to remember that using incognito mode can also help with some of the more, shall we say, ethically challenged marketing policies out there, which charge you, for example, more for shopping from different devices or with devices using different operating systems. It's important to really not give the retailer any clues to who you are before you actually buy if you are going to get a lower price. You can get more tips like this by following my Twitter feed at Ian Thompson.
It's the ultimate virtual reality gaming machine.
Here we are in, what is this, number five. We're putting this together with the help of the expert, Ryan Shrout, from PC's Perspective. Hello, Ryan.
How are you doing today?
I am very well. Today we Good. Add, let's see, we've done the motherboard, we've done the GPU, we've done the case. Love that case. Yeah. Love everything so far. We put the processor in. It's an Intel chip, the 6700K i7. And now it's time for memory, RAM. And, I mean, this is a no-brainer, right? I mean, how hard can it be? Didn't we choose the RAM in effect when we chose the motherboard?
You definitely choose the classification of memory, right? So when you choose the motherboard, you know, it's a DDR4 platform, right? So you know you got to go with DDR4. You know how many memory slots you have. We know that the processor is a two-channel memory controller, so you need at least two DIMMs. But we actually went a little – we filled up the motherboard basically completely.
You have to add RAM still in pairs? You still do it that way?
technically you don't have to, right? Like if you wanted to run the system off one DIMM, you could, but you lose a little bit on the performance side because it is a two-channel memory controller.
So is it interleaved between the two
Nope, two-channel. It's a dual channel. Now, once you get four modules, then yes, each channel will do that with two
And on this motherboard, four is as far as we can go.
Yep.
And how big are the sticks these days? Is 8 gigs as big as you can get, or can we go bigger?
That's kind of at the high end of reasonable cost today.
Ah.
Yeah.
We can get,
so, I mean,
we can get bigger, but more dense as RAM, but you would pay the price for it.
Yes, correct.
Now, you went with Corsair, certainly one of the great brand names in RAM. There's Kingston, there's Crucial, there's Corsair. Yep. Is it a commodity these days, or is there a difference in brands?
It's really is a commodity product, right? Yeah. So Corsair, again, has been one of those brands that's been around forever. You know, you have a little bit more faith in their kind of capability, their RMAs, if you have problems, right? You know, those types of things is really what you're buying on. But you're really looking at performance to price as kind of the de facto standard when picking out a product.
And we're putting 32 gigs in.
Yeah, it seems a little high, but
you don't really need that. You know, I have a 16 gig machine, and I wish I had 32. I don't think it's a bad thing to max out the RAM.
It's never a negative, right? Except for the cost. You know, if somebody asked me today, could I still run Windows 10 on 8 gigs of memory? I would say yes.
Of course. In fact, Windows IoT on a Raspberry Pi is running in 1 gig of memory.
Right.
And I remember very well going to a computer store and a guy saying, you know, 8 megs is the perfect amount. You got 2 megs for the software, 2 megs for the operating system, 2 megs for your RAM disk, and 2 megs for the cache. Megabytes. So we got, what is this, 32,000 megabytes in this machine. Now, I noticed this RAM has a beautiful heat sink around it. Is that just styling, or do we really need these?
Yeah, you know, the heat sinks on memory are just the way things are now. I don't think they're really super necessary, but that's where you're at, right? And these are actually fairly toned down.
Really?
Memory modules.
They don't have fins, right?
Right. They don't have fins. You know, I don't think we ordered the stuff that comes with an external fan.
Does it get hot?
They don't have LED lights. They get warm, but they don't get hot.
RAM's very easy to put in these days because it's keyed, so you can't put it in wrong. And these clips, you just release the clips and you slot it in, and then sometimes you have to press it. I noticed that these weren't too hard on this motherboard anyway. I didn't have to press too hard to get these RAM in the slot.
Yeah.
And if the clips close and it's in, right, there's nothing else you need to worry about.
As long as make sure you've got the key on the memory module lined up with the key on the DIMM slot itself.
Right. So there's the key, and there's a little...
That's all there is. And since we're filling all four slots, you don't really have to worry about which slots get the memory first. But if you're only using two modules, that would be something to consider. You know, and for what we're building, the VR system, 32 gigs RAM is plenty. It's more than enough for any gaming you'll be able to do. But it also, you know, you're just kind of future-proofing. You're giving yourself a little bit more headroom for other things you might want to do into the future, essentially.
I just feel like sometimes, you know, obviously it's a diminishing returns, and we've gone past that in terms of just running a game on an operating system. But, you know, you might have virtual machines. I mean, there's all sorts of things you end up doing if you have more RAM, so...
Right.
Given that RAM has gotten so inexpensive.
Yes. I mean, this is a fairly expensive kit, about $170 for 32 gigs. Yeah.
That's kind of mind-boggling.
It really is.
It's not cheap, but that's so much cheaper. I mean, I paid probably $500 for 64K of RAM. You know, I mean, this is, but that's awesome, and it looks good in there. They say on the box, overclockable. Is that something I should pay attention to?
You can if you want to, but honestly, the performance benefits you get out of increasing the clock rate of your memory are very minimal.
Yeah.
Even when you look at benchmarks, and even less when you're looking at real-world applications, right? And that's one of the reasons. So this memory is rated at 2,666 megahertz, so 2.6 gigahertz.
Is that the bus speed?
No, it's just the overall frequency of the memory.
Frequency of the RAM, okay.
But it's on the low side for DDR4. But if you go up to like the 3200 or the 3400 and you want 32 gigs, you're going to pay a lot more for it.
Okay.
So in my book, it's a much better trade-off to get more capacity than more speed.
That's interesting.
On your
so that's a point to take home from this is you don't need to go more than 2666. And the money you'll save will allow you to put more memory in, and that is going to give you more bang for the buck.
Yep.
Good to know. Vengeance sure. LPX RAM from Corsair. It's DDR4. Motherboard's DDR4 compatible, so we wanted to put the fastest RAM we could. It could have a higher clock speed, but this is more than adequate for what we're going to be doing.
For sure.
Thank you, Ryan Shrout. More at PCPer.com. Don't forget the hardware leaderboard, because he has it set up. Not only is he showing you how to build machines from the least expensive to the most expensive, he's even got how to build a machine, as we are doing, for the Oculus Rift for your VR future. That's what we're kind of trying to build here. Not just the ultimate gaming machine, but the ultimate VR gaming machine. We've got 5 segments in the can. You can see them all at YouTube.com. And follow along. And boy, you know, if you have $5,000 just lying around, maybe you'd want to build the ultimate VR game machine. I can't wait to get this thing fired up. We're getting close. Thanks, Ryan Shrout.
I am so excited. By the way, that was obviously I changed my into a sweater for that event, that segment. Mm-hmm. No, that was recorded earlier. Line dancing.
You love line dancing.
You're
too,
wearing
don't
your
you?
Texas boots.
I am. Can people see them?
They look like, are they like Uggs? Are they like sheepskin lined in
oh
there?
Oh my God, no.
Oh, okay.
I would never purchase Uggs.
All right.
These are real. Like that.
They're pointed for kicking in something in the corner. Okay. So, what line dancing involves, it's kind of dancing for people who have no rhythm. Because you're not moving your body, you're just moving your foot. Right?
Well, that's a common misconception. Line dancing is for people who are full of rhythm, full of life, and
yes.
can really take over a dance floor. It takes a lot of energy.
These people look like they're so full of life, they're just knocking me over. So should I watch line dancing on YouTube?
You can.
Or should I learn from that tech girl?
I would say learn from that tech girl.
You do, at your line dancing events, you have half an hour before where you teach it first, right?
It's the whole thing. So what I do to encourage people to actually line dance, I teach Footloose. So
I want a Footloose!
All right. Remake of the movie, they did Country Western.
Do something really easy for me.
Okay.
I want to watch your feet.
How can you see my feet?
Through
the
magic of television. Okay. Okay. But I got to keep watching. Actually, you know, I'm going to have to stand over here. That way I can see. Okay, good.
Okay, we'll just start off with something simple. We'll do a grapevine right and a grapevine left.
I know a grapevine. That's this. What the heck? Okay, wait a minute. So the grapevine is...
And you want to slap.
So you're going to do two...
So what we're doing is we're doing a dance called east, slap and leather.
Grapevine east. Bow!
Woo!
Woo! And then grapevine west.
Woo!
Woo!
And then you go back 2 times. Woo! And then you go.
What's that? What's that for?
That's how you do it. You come back.
Grapevine
that's
east,
your opportunity
grapevine
to stomp.
West. Woo! Oh, that's stomping.
Yeah. And then you.
Okay, you just do it for a while. I gotta watch.
Okay.
Can you hear the music? Look at you.
Everybody knows slap the leather.
Slap the leather.
All right.
All right. You know, we're all doing it here. I love that.
Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, Liberty Madison.
My slap and leather, everyone. Slap and leather.
Ah! All right. yes, I think we're ready for the Grand Master in just a second. And we're going to do our mailbag. We're going to answer some questions. I'm really excited about the blindfold thing. But first, let me just quickly mention Prosper.com. It's a peer-to-peer lending marketplace. This is a brilliant idea. This is where technology really makes a difference. If you need money and you need it fast, you could go to your credit cards. And what is it? The interest rate now is like double digit. It's like 20% or something. It's crazy. Or you could go to your friend. You got an Uncle Lou. You could always borrow from Uncle Lou, but he's never going to let you hear the end of it. You're going to pay him back, and he's going to say 20 years from now, remember that time I lent you $50? Now, I don't want to borrow from Uncle Lou, and I definitely don't want to have to put on pants and go to the bank and say, please, sir, may I have some money? Wouldn't it be cool if you could borrow up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days and do it entirely online? You can. Prosper brings people with money to lend. These are actually investors. It's a great investment opportunity with people who need to borrow money. The rates are low. They're fixed, so you know exactly what you're going to pay. There's no surprises. And you can find out what you're worth right now by going to
prosper.com/NSS. This will not affect your good credit. You're going to find out what your low rate is worth. And you know what? The first thing I do, if you do have a big credit card debt, pay off the credit cards. With a low fixed rate loan, you'll be saving money right away. And then after that, maybe you're going to do a little home improvement, save up for a vacation. And there's all sorts of things you can do. It's all waiting for you. Prosper.com/NSS. Don't go to Uncle Lou. Go to prosper.com/NSS. Actually, you'd be better off going to Uncle Lou than the credit cards. I think at one point I owed like $30,000 on my credit cards. And the thing is, you can never pay that off because the interest is so high that most of the payment you're giving them is just the interest.
Yeah, you're still paying.
And it's just it feels like a scam to me. They're like, use your credit card. And then once you get that big debt, you can never get out from under it. So don't be like me. Get out from under it, prosper.com, and you will be happy. Now, just yesterday, we couldn't do it today because he's actually right now as we're speaking, he's playing 35 games of chess. His opponents are looking at the board. He's not looking at the board. Grandmaster, one of the best players in the United States, Timur Gurayev, joined us yesterday to talk about it. Take a look. Okay, I have to say, every once in a while, I get to do an interview on something I'm really interested in. As you probably know, if you've watched me, I'm a big chess buff. I'm what they call a patser. That means I'm not very good, but I love playing chess. And what I really love is meeting people who are really, really good, like Timur Gurayev. He is a grandmaster of chess. Timur, great. Welcome to the new Screensavers.
Yeah, thank you, Leo.
But you also like to play a special kind of chess, blindfold.
Yes, this is the passion I've discovered several years ago.
And not just one game at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Many games at a time.
Yeah. I started off playing chess when I was 7 years old. My grandfather taught me how to play.
You grew up in Uzbekistan. Chess is huge in all of the former Soviet Union, right?
It's a common pastime activity. Yeah. In Uzbekistan, back in my home country, we actually drank a lot of your tea just now. But people sit down and
drink tea,
and then it's like chaihana, kind of like in lotus position, and then they'll have a wooden chessboard like this, and you know, just slowly play through
it's
the
wonderful.
Game, kind of like a siesta tradition. And instead of it, you just kind of zone out playing chess.
So for years, of course, the Soviet Union dominated chess, and still produces some of the best chess players in the world. In fact, many of our best players in the United States are Russian grandmasters. Have you relocated to the U.S.? Are you a U.S. resident now?
Well, nowadays I travel.
Citizen of the world.
Citizen of the world, yeah. I don't have a permanent place that I stay. Last place I lived was Las Vegas. Uh-huh. I lived there for about a year.
You play poker?
Play poker quite a bit. Yeah. I used to have a lot more passion for it.
Yeah.
Surprisingly enough, it's just a little bit slow for me.
Chess, there's no game slower than chess.
Actually, there is.
It's called Go, and I've been watching. Have you been watching this Go championship between the computer AlphaGo?
I've heard a lot of people brought it up. It sounds fascinating.
So, tomorrow you're doing what they call a blindfold simul, mm-hmm. an exhibition of simultaneous games. How many games are you going to play?
So I'm going to face 35 boards. So 35, actually might be a few more, because some of the players are going to team up to face me. So I'll play 35 opponents blindfolded simultaneously.
So you keep 35 games in your head the whole time.
Yes. To clarify, the idea is that you say, I'm going to announce my move.
Yeah.
My opponents will announce their move back. So we actually say the move.
They'll have a set, but you're going to be wearing a blindfold.
Yeah, keeping the blindfold
on. So you'll say
on,
E4, and I'll say E5, and then you'll continue to move every time you come to the board.
Yeah.
And you don't say, oh, where's your king? You know the position when you get to the board.
Yes.
Now, we have joining us a neurologist, a neuroscientist from UCLA and the Rissman Memory Lab, Dr. Jesse Rissman. Dr. Rissman, welcome, first of all, to the new Screensavers. Thanks for joining
us. Thank you. Yeah.
You've studied Timur. Are you using functional MRIs to watch him play?
So we were very excited to have the opportunity to work with someone with this remarkable ability that he has. And it really is astonishing, if you think about it, how he can keep so many boards, 35 or more, active in in memory and shift between them without experiencing interference and getting confused about which piece positions were present in each game configuration. So during our first opportunity to work with him in the lab, we gave him a battery of cognitive tasks, different tests of memory and attention and spatial processing. And then we also had the chance to put him in an MRI scanner and look at his brain anatomy and brain function. So we did a series of scans, and we're still just beginning to analyze the data to see if we can find some exceptional characteristics of his brain that might underlie this ability that he has that very few people that I've ever interacted with or know people, in fact, can do what he does. So it's really a challenge to see if we can understand it better, but we were excited to have the opportunity to search through his brain data and find neural correlates of this ability.
You don't feel like a freak, Timur, when they do this, like a freak of nature?
Well, they say if you want any kind of abnormal results, you got to have abnormal behaviors to go with it.
Yeah, but I don't think this is a normal abnormal. This is remarkable. We here in San Francisco, of course, celebrate our own international master, George Koltanowski, for years had the record, blindfold record. But I think it's Miguel Najdorf, the famous grandmaster, who holds the world record. How many games is that?
Well, it's pretty fascinating, actually. The story behind it is it's 45 games that Miguel Najdorf played in, I believe, it's either Sao Paulo or either in Argentina.
He can't remember, ladies and gentlemen. He can't remember.
He played two, which were very high in number.
Yeah. Do you win most of these games?
He did accomplish more than 80% of the wins.
Are you? You're not playing
pure wins.
You're not playing other grandmasters. You're playing expert players. What level of players do you typically play?
On average, I'll probably face a chess player of about 1,500 strength, which
That's average club player, kind of.
Yeah, that's the chess player you'd imagine. Like, if you go consistent about chess, you could probably reach that level within 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. I got about 1,800, so I would also be in that range. Not a great, not a master, not a professional player, but good enough to kind of give you a little bit of a challenge. I mean, it's not like they're just rolling over for you.
Well, that's 1,800 is the level of player that we're looking for the world record event. That's kind of the average.
You're going to try to break this record?
Yes. So that's going to be 47 games blindfolded simultaneously.
When are you going to do that?
This year.
Awesome.
I've been building up to it for quite some time, so it's do or die, you know. Just do it while I can, while I'm at it.
Well, you do have to. I was going to say you have to be a young guy, but George played many, many games well into his 80s. So I guess you don't have to be. Do you have an abnormal memory anyway? I mean, are you able to? I mean, remember everything?
I think generally how I go about life is in intuition.
So intuition.
I don't like to. It's interesting because a lot of people would probably think that I overanalyze at times, but try to make the best decision possible. That's what the chess players' advantage and disadvantage at life. A lot of smart people's advantage and disadvantage at life.
It's a good intuition and ability.
They have a strong
it.
Mind, but then they just overthink it.
Yeah. You know? Dr. Rissman, did you note an unusual memory capacity in Timur?
Well, that's a great question. That was one of the first things that we were interested in exploring, whether his abilities and memory that he clearly has for chess games would also be seen in other domains. And so we gave him a number of different memory tasks. We had him memorize sequences of digits, of letters. We had him look at pictures and then make decisions later whether he recognized them, and the pictures that he saw in the tests were sometimes very similar to ones he had studied, but not exactly the same. So it's a test of the precision of his visual memory. And then all of these tests he did at least average and many above average, but on none of them was he off the charts exceptional. So it does appear, I mean, he has a very good memory, and in many of the tests he was well above average, but it wasn't the case that he was doing the best that we've ever seen on these other non-chess memory tasks. I think it's very specific to chess, or at least visual imagery, the ability to pull up these chess boards and visualize them, and we're interested in our future studies exploring his mental imagery more.
But you know, with the research that we did together with Dr. Rissman, I actually did a blindfold simul in the Coachella Valley. a little while later, and it was Valentine's Day. So they say, people say, well, everybody was curious. They heard about our project and say, well, what did you guys find out? Okay, because, you know, we just did the initial stage just to examine the structure of my mind. And as a joke, I actually said, hey, well, it's like, the part of your brain that is responsible for playing blindfold chess.
Yeah.
It's the same part of your brain that is responsible for falling in love for the first time.
Is that true, Dr. Rissman? I don't think that's true.
I can't verify that.
He will not take a stand on that. Blindfoldking.com. I wish you all the best. We'll be watching with great interest, not only tomorrow in Santa Clara, but in Prague this summer in August, when you attempt to not only break, but smash the record with 50 simultaneous games.
Wow. And we thank Dr. Rissman for joining us and his studies on Timur Gureyev. I wonder how he's doing, because it's going on. He's playing right now at the church. And then we'll watch with interest in August when he plays in Prague. I was thinking, Liberty, maybe I should do... I liked his hair, like the little mohawk. You think I should do a mohawk-y cut?
You want to do it again?
People do... Again? Yeah, well, once is enough. People with gray hair generally don't go for the hip young style.
You think so?
I don't know.
No, I think you should give it a go.
I was thinking of having maybe a man bob. You know what that is?
No.
What is the man bun? The man bun.
I love a man bun.
Really?
Yeah.
No, you don't.
I actually do.
Do you?
Yes.
A guy with a bun on his head? not a hair bun like that.
You mean like that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Not.
Well, that's a fake... That's a faux bob. I could get a faux bob.
What did you call the man bun?
Man. Well, a bun. Is it a bun or
you
a bob?
You could do that.
It's a bun. That's an actual bun, that one.
That's
a bun.
A Cinnabon.
Yeah, now that.
A good Cinnabon.
I love that. Are you ready for the mailbag? By the way, you're fun. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
So much fun. Follow her at Liberty Madison. I don't know where I got that idea. And libertymadison.com, the website.
Yes.
YouTube. She's been actually putting together a vlog as she's doing this behind the scenes. So there'll be a whole vlog of your experience working on the new screensavers behind the scene. That'll
yes,
be fun.
Check that out. That.
All right. Mailbag is here. And Liberty was funny before. She said, now, somebody's going to roll in. Oh, look. Some Schneinerbach.
That's
There's
a Texas
one,
brand.
One Schneinerbach and an invitation to
That's
South
That's a Texas
by.
Brand.
I know. Somebody brought this back just for you from Texas.
No, they did not.
They're drinking all the other bottles. There, you can have the Schneinerbach. I was. I saw this.
You know I don't
around.
Drink alcohol,
Leo. Oh, that's right. Good for you. All right, one more for Jerry. He's cut off after this. And then inside there's a little mail. Wait a minute. Here's something. Oh, no. I thought there was a man bob in there. Here, this is for you. A man bun? That's what I want next week is a man bun in there. Go ahead.
So we have a question here.
Yes.
And I say we get to it.
Yes.
So here we go. I am applying for a new virtual communications facility position. And this particular entity scours your social media.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And they do a background check.
Oh, boy.
Do I need to spend an entire week deleting?
No.
I haven't even finished the question.
Go ahead.
Do I need to spend
involves an entire week, I'm against.
You're like, I'm out.
I'm out.
Do I need to spend an entire week deleting before I formally submit my application? Herefore, my motto has always been, I say what I want to say when I want to say it. And if you don't like it, don't stand by me.
That's not me drinking that giant bottle of... That's not me getting a tattoo on my ass. That's not... Yeah, it's me.
Yeah, you could be like Leo. Apparently, this is irresponsible and foolhardy.
This is...
And that goes with that, too.
Yeah, yeah.
What is the etiquette here? I teeter on the line between witty and gauche and don't want a prospective employer to judge me.
Well, that's a really interesting question.
What should
question.
I do?
You know, my daughter's 24,
mm-hmm.
and she said just the other day, she said, Dad, I think I'm going to stop. I'm going to cancel my Facebook account because I'm worried about, she's in college now, but what's going to happen when I go out in the employment world? I don't want people to see those stuff that's on my Facebook feed right now.
I think that's an interesting line because it's on one hand, it's saying, do I literally become another person? Because you're going to become another person.
You're kind of sculpting your personality to fit the job. But don't you do that? I mean, I don't know. I haven't had a job in so long, I can't remember.
Well, I feel like when you're posting online, just in general, shouldn't you be posting the best self? Posting your best image?
Now.
Posting your best you at every moment,
that
at every
like
opportunity?
Something your mama told you.
Really?
Really,
Leo?
She said, when you were 10. No, don't do that. That's terrible. What is this from your Facebook feed, Brian? What's going on there?
This is Jerry's.
I do feel like you make an excellent point. That it sounds like he's saying is, all my life I've said what I want
when
I want.
This is Misha. So she's,
Misha. Is that a
girl.
Woman or a man? Okay.
Yeah.
I say what I want when I want. If you don't like it, don't stand by me. I understand that. But when you're looking for a job, that may not be
the
persona
thing
that the people want to hire.
Well, particularly, it says that she is looking to submit at a communications company.
Yeah.
So I think that's a bit different, too. So if you're looking at someone that is essentially focused on...
We're looking, by the way...
I can't even get through this.
For people listening,
hilarious.
We are looking at weird Facebook posts right now. People who probably shouldn't have put that on Facebook.
Well,
I love that idea. Post your best self.
Post your best self. And I have to use myself as an example because I post for myself. And for myself, I would have to say, I haven't posted anything that I would not be excited about to see on...
Right.
On a network.
But in
or
a way, that's saying...
It's just myself.
That's saying don't be yourself, in a way.
That's the way I feel. I'm saying if you have to post, like you said, if you're carving out this curated version of your life just for your employer, basically, as an employer, I would feel like I'm hiring I don't know who I'm hiring.
Yeah, a Stepford wife.
Yes. Yeah. I wouldn't know who I was truly getting if you're out here using apps and different software like Clear or Ajax. Those are apps that are actually going to go through your social media with various algorithms using algorithms that they obviously have proprietary combined with IBM Watson, and they will flag any inappropriate data.
So there's
and they
tools
will help you
to say, here's what you should get rid of.
Yes, absolutely. So in this case, I would say for her, why not? Because, you know, homeless, no job, versus a Facebook page. I mean, you know.
Yeah, see, I always say be yourself, and if they don't like you, well, then that's not the job for
Again,
you.
That's what I say.
But it's not, you're right, that's not necessarily good advice for everybody. You need to have, you got to get that job, and maybe they wouldn't, but you wouldn't get the job otherwise. Maybe you do need to curate your
And you
feed.
Look at some
that's
people.
That's a really interesting question.
Another person I had a conversation with recently was applying for a fire position, and they asked for their password. And rather than
give up the password, he told me,
well, Liberty, I will no longer see you on Facebook because I'm deleting my Facebook. Oh. And I thought, oh, my God, but we're good friends.
That's shocking.
And we're done.
It's a government job, right? It's a firefighter.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's what they do, but I would never, I would say, I'm sorry, I guess I'm not going to get that job, but I'm
not
giving you a password.
That's what I would say. I'm not giving you my password.
Account.
Right.
That's my personal account. That is not in any way reflect on what kind of firefighter I would
exactly.
be.
Exactly. I agree.
Boy, but I think that thing happens, right? I think
it happens more often than you think, but one out of three prospective job seekers, they're discriminated against because of their social media, yet 86% of people are on social media.
Right.
So
and posting
that's a
everything,
bit of a quandary.
Right? Nowadays, we post everything. Maybe that'll change over time. And I remember a day when if a president admitted that he'd smoked marijuana, that would be it. No chance to run for president. And starting with Bill Clinton, that, you know, now it's like Bill Clinton gotten a lot of heat for saying, I smoked pot, but I
didn't inhale.
Yeah, right. But now it's not a big deal. I'm sure in fact, I remember interviews with President Obama. I said, well, yeah, I was in college. I smoked pot. Of course I did.
I think and times have changed.
It would be hard. You'd be hard-pressed to find a president who hadn't done that. And so that's what's happening. I think in times to come, everybody will have a Facebook page in which they've got magic marker on their face because they're passed out dead drunk. And it won't be something they'll discriminate
I'm
against.
I'm curious as to what is quote-unquote inappropriate. Because you will have people saying you holding a beer, you holding an adult
right.
beverage is inappropriate, let alone you have these exact same companies sponsoring events where they're providing you with said beer. Providing you with said.
I know.
There we go.
What kind of business would allow their employees to drink on the job, I ask you? I am glad I'm not your age, to be honest with you. I think that this is a very difficult time, and I don't think that the rules... when I was your age, you knew what the rules were. And if it meant you didn't do certain things, and there were far fewer ways that you could get in trouble, too, right? There was no Facebook, there was no Twitter. But now you and my kids are growing up in a world where there are all these, you know, everybody's very public, and the rules are kind of in flux. We don't really even know what the rules are.
You know, they're still making their way, and that's interesting that you say, you know, with younger kids, and you've seen the new changes with identity over in France, where parents are literally being charged with fines for posting photos of their children on Facebook.
Wow.
So right now it hasn't been clearly defined, and we've got some time to see how that goes.
Yeah. Well, I have some sympathy when Abby, my daughter, said, I'm going to delete my Facebook feed. I said, well, isn't that how you stay in touch with your friends?
Yes.
And she said, yeah, but I don't really like them that much, so it's okay. I think she'll regret it. So what I said is, you know, what you can do is deactivate. And it doesn't delete anything. Deactivate it. See how you feel 6 months from now, a year.
That's what I told the firefighter.
Yeah.
I said, please don't delete.
Just
deactivate.
Yeah. Here's what I got the other day, and I sent this to everybody on the staff because this is why we do what we do, our shows. My son, this is from David. My son Eric had a bike accident today. He was wearing his Twitch shirt when they brought him to the hospital, and I think he's okay. He wouldn't let them cut it away. He said, no, it's my Twitch shirt. And between their work, he wanted to watch Twitch. Here he is in the hospital watching on his iPad Pro, watching the new screensavers a couple of weeks ago. David writes, we visited last fall. We watched iOS Today live. We are watching the new screensavers to distract him while the docs work on him. He's doing much better than the picture indicates. We love you guys and gals, and we've heard from him since. He's doing great. And David and Eric, and we're sending you guys some Twit T-shirts. So next time, Eric, if the doctors need to work on you, it's okay. We'll send you a new Twit T-shirt. In fact, that's a guarantee I give everybody. If they want to cut your Twit T-shirt off, let them. We'll see. We can make more, but we're sending him a fez and some other stuff. And so I was really touched by that.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really sweet.
He deserves a shirt for life.
There he
That's
is in
great.
The hospital and watching some old guy talk about technology. I love it. Hey, Liberty Madison, you're the greatest. Thank you so much for being here. It was a lot of fun.
Well,
come back soon, will you?
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
I think we should talk to you about a position, but I've seen your Facebook feed. Don't touch it. Don't do a thing, okay? Don't make a change at all. And then we thank everybody for joining us. We had a lot of fun today. We got a great show next week and every week. Join us, won't you? We do it about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC on Saturday afternoons. You can watch live. You can be in the chat room. You can participate. But if you can't, we have on-demand audio and video of everything we do on the Twit Network, available on our website, of course. In this case, it's twit.tv/NSS. There's a YouTube feed, youtube.com/thenewscreensavers. And, of course, the best way to get it is to subscribe. Find a podcast application or one of our great Twit applications. They're on every platform. And subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on the New Screensavers. Bye-bye.